Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Corey Kogan is Franklin Covey's Global Practice Leader for Productivity, and she focuses her research and content development around time management, project management, and communication skills. She is one of the authors of the Five Choices to Extraordinary Productivity, Project Management Essentials for the Unofficial Project Manager, and Presentation Advantage. Corey brings 25 years of business expertise from frontline positions to an executive team member. Prior to Franklin Covey, Corey spent 6 years as the executive vice president of worldwide operations for Alpha Graphics. She was responsible for the teams and projects that helped franchisees start up their businesses, develop their staff, and reach profitability. She led the implementation of ISO 9000 globally and managed the installation of the first company-wide global learning system. Corey is probably best known for her ability to provide practical application and logic that consistently motivates people to take action. In 2005, Utah Business Magazine honored Corey as one of the business women to watch in Utah. In 2012, Corey earned Certificate of Neuroleadership Foundations from the Neuroleadership Institute, of which she is an ongoing member. Corey, we're going to talk to you about the book, Five Choices, The Path to Extraordinary Productivity. Welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you. Pleasure.
It's interesting because I personally came at this, normally it's sort of a left to right process for us here at the AMA where there's a book that might lead into a seminar, okay? My personal experience has been, I attended the seminar, which is dynamite, by the way, and now, you know, 4 or 5 months down the road, I'm holding a book in my hands, which is pretty cool. So if you don't mind, let's just jump into this here. You refer to something in the book called the productivity paradox, and it seems to frame most of the framework of the five choices that the book is constructed in and around. Why is it both easier and harder than ever to achieve extraordinary productivity?
Well, thanks, Dave. That's a great question, and it really does frame the entire book when you think about it, because sometimes people just jump to, oh my gosh, the technology is killing me. But when you think about it, the technology is a wonderful thing. I mean, it's done amazing things, and I like to say this all the time. I could be on a webcast or a webinar with folks in India at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's amazing. And it's amazing that we can do that. And we can access, you know, have such extended reach. And I find it even more amazing when they say, hey, send me that file. Let's look at that together. And in 3 seconds, yeah, we're looking at that, you know. So when you think about that around medical research or just the things we can do, 16-year-old CEOs, it's really, it's amazing what you can do with the technology.
You're older every day.
I know, me too. So really, when you pause and think about it, the technology is enabling unbelievable possibilities and potential. You take that same concept and you reverse it or reframe it, and suddenly what we're saying is the technology then has unleashed this unstoppable flow of information, of demands, of accessibility all day long. There's no difference between day and night anymore when you're texting and all that, or working even, yeah, et cetera. And so we're not used to that. And so all of this is coming in and it's just burying us.
Yeah.
So it's harder than ever because, yeah, we're so easily distracted by it. So it's a real conundrum, and it really is this paradox pushing against each other.
Right.
So that's really, when you think about that, you then say, okay, how do we break through that harder, yeah, to really unleash and really get to that easier that, mm-hmm, does then lead us to what can be extraordinary productivity?
Yeah, exactly. And it's one thing to say it. And again, it's another thing to experience it. So obviously read the book, which is amazing. But if you have the opportunity to attend the seminar, I don't normally say this, but it could change your life because it's neat. It puts you in control. So many times it seems like the data or the information or the email streams are controlling you. And this flips it. You know, this puts you in control.
It does.
Right? Does that,
yes,
work for you?
It works for me. And, it, you know, it goes to, you tempt me with your statements and you know it, because it leads to the word intentionality. It really is about just becoming so conscious of all of this, because, mm-hmm, our brains are wired to just mindlessly deal with all the novelty of all the technology. And just when you say in control, it's just really becoming intentional about what we're doing all day long.
Okay, so when a person is trying to make a change, specifically in their behavior, why is a framework so helpful?
You know, so much of our work is, and my study and my research, as you mentioned even in my bio, is around neuroscience, neuroleadership, because we are paid to think, innovate, create, and execute. That's the main job of the workforce in the 21st century. And so the brain, when you think about it, is our number one tool. Mm-hmm. And we then say, well, how do you optimize that tool? And so frameworks for the brain are the best way for the brain to digest, synthesize, and remember stuff. So even Dr. John Medina, who wrote the book Brain Rules, it's another great book. It's easy to read. It's not very long. And he wrote that actually the way the brain can accept information. And he said that hierarchical structure information will help humans remember things something like 40% better. Okay, and that's not the exact quote, but sure, that's the general idea. So our brain accepts information in small packets. It needs rhythm. The brain wants predictability. So when you put something into a framework, into chunks, into something that has sort of a rhythm to it, almost like your social security number, it's dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun kind of thing, then it's easy for us to act on it.
Sure. Is the human attention span getting shorter?
The human attention span in 2008, the average attention span was 12 seconds. That was long, long ago in 2008.
I know, that seems so long ago.
And this is research-based. In 2012, the last piece of research showed it down to 8 seconds.
Okay.
Where people can really just stay focused.
Yikes. All right, this is probably the question that every single interviewer is going to ask you, so let's just get it out of the way. What are the five choices?
So the five choices, first of all, are in the framework of three key areas. There's three problems we said needed to be solved. One is we have a million decisions coming at us all day long, and we're trying to handle them linearly and all, and we're missing the good stuff, mm-hmm. right? At the end of the day, we're going, gosh, I was so busy, but what the heck did I get done? While we're trying to make those decisions, our attention is just totally under attack with all the technology, the dings, the pings, our brain naturally wants to go there. And third, we're all sort of worn out. We're suffering from this energy crisis, you know, whereby because of accessibility and just trying to make all these decisions, we're just worn out. So under those three come these five choices to support those or enable those. And so the first two around decision management, choice one, act on the important, don't react to the urgent. Just become conscious, get your arms around everything that's incoming, and have a process, which is described in the book, mm-hmm. where you can very simply discern and consciously discern all of the incoming and make really good decisions about what to do and what not to do. Mm-hmm. Choice two, second half of decision management, is go for extraordinary, don't settle for ordinary. If we're giving you a process to discern, then we need to take the time to really think about and map out what is really important to us in the context of our roles, mm-hmm. our key roles in life right now, which is what's most important to us and where our values are really buried, the underpinnings of mm-hmm. that. Choice three, which is the beginning of attention management, is schedule the big rocks, don't sort gravel. Mm-hmm. And really it's saying to be able to stay focused, what are the core practical planning systems that we need to put in play that really can help us execute on those things that are most important. Mm-hmm. Choice four, rule your technology, don't let it rule you, is about alignment. And it's really saying, first of all, take a look and think about consciously, are you addicted to technology? Are you using it when you should be doing some other important things? And it's all good. I mean, even the games are good, just the time you put into using them. And then how do you take technology and really integrate it with workflow to really get on top of it and not be a slave to it? Mm-hmm. And last, energy management. Fuel your fire, don't burn out. Really about the energy drivers that give your brain the right glucose, the right oxygen to be able to make all those decisions and stay focused.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're very intentional about including current research in the field of brain and neuroscience as part of the five choices. Can you give us maybe perhaps a short overview of some of the key findings in this area and how they can impact our productivity?
Well, you've heard me so far use the word intentionality, consciousness a couple of times. And the whole neuroscience piece is key. So we needed the doctors and the researchers to help us with this. And I already mentioned Dr. John Medina, Dr. Ed Halliwell, who also has written the book, it's coming out, Driven to Distraction. Mm-hmm. Expert in attention deficit disorder, really talks about how to get hold of that distraction. And really, I think the underpinnings of all of it is understanding the difference between the reactive brain, which is the back of our brain, and the prefrontal cortex. And really understanding that the back of your brain is a mindless place. It helps us survive. It's very efficient. Versus the prefrontal cortex, which is where we think and are very intentional. And just very simply, that if we can be more intentional and use our prefrontal cortex, the next piece of research really is around our neurons have the ability to refire and rewire. Mm-hmm. And so the more intentional we are, the more we're able to create new habits, which then become part of our routinized system of our brain. So mm-hmm. just those few concepts, the plasticity of the brain, the ability to rewire, mm-hmm. how you use the prefrontal cortex, how you use your reactive, primitive part of your brain, mm-hmm. all work together to drive the five choices. And the last thing I'll say, Dr. Daniel Amen was really key in this as well, and Dr. Richard Restack, among others, around what it takes to give your prefrontal cortex the energy it requires yeah. to do this kind of work.
So is your prefrontal cortex, I hope I get this right, is that sort of training the back part of your brain, the whatever the primitive or reptilian part of your brain? Is the front part of your brain training the back part of your brain? Is something like that happening?
It's something like, and it's always fun when somebody says to me, when they read the book or they'll pick their head up and go, aha, in the galleys and stuff like that, or in the class, and they'll say, so just like you, they'll say, so let me get this right, Corey. So what you're saying is if I just really think about something that I'm doing and consciously work on it, then I'm rewiring my brain. And in fact, that thing will head to the back of my
eventually,
brain and
right?
become a habit or routinized. And so essentially, that's what plasticity is. That's what rewiring is. So you
right.
are doing that.
Well, right. But a piece of that is, and it's absolutely in your book, but I've seen it elsewhere, you know, in Kahneman's mm-hmm. book or in even Duhigg's book about habits and
yes,
stuff like that.
Yes.
Is yes, it's being purposeful, it's being intentional, but it's practicing, it's being repetitive. It's not just saying, today is the day.
No.
You know what I mean?
It's
kind of like
this,
you gotta work it through again and again and again.
Yeah. It's not just one, okay, I did it, so I'm rewired. It is
just like
a constant. You strengthen. And the brain doesn't forget things. That's why people it's easy to slide back from a habit, right? It's easy to get bad. It's easier to get bad.
Too easy.
Than it is to get good. So you have to be vigilant. So you do. And that's where the term unconscious competency, when you mm-hmm. think about all of that, unconscious competency is practice.
Right.
I can do it now without thinking about it,
right.
but I need to keep practicing.
Sure. What are the key takeaways that this Five Choices book leaves people with? I mean, so that if they follow the prescription or the direction, they can actually change the quality and increase the productivity in the way they work. But here's the other thing that's cool. I've noticed this about so many other Franklin Covey programs, is it's not just the way you work, it's the way you live. And that's sort of a defining characteristic, I have to say this, another little plug here, that I find that's cool about Franklin Covey stuff. It isn't just how to be a better manager or how to be a better employee. It's how to have a better life.
And Dr. Covey was always, from the very beginning, it's about the whole person, which really means your whole life. And so much of this is about work-life balance. I know we don't have time here, but I can give you a million examples of, and this is important for the leaders who are listening, that when you focus some attention on the workforce's other life, the rest of their life, and you give them the tools or help them become better there, they will bring their better selves to work. This is a very big key, because I do have some organizations that say, don't go into the personal stuff. We just care about their work stuff. And it breaks my heart, because so many people in the workforce who don't have decision-making power at their jobs, really, at all. They just have a job. How do you help them improve their product? How do you get more out of them for a very tight job description?
Sure.
Give them some tools where they can do a better job being a better husband or wife or partner or parent or whatever.
Right.
And you know this, because you know when you're not in good shape at home and you come to work, it takes a load of energy.
Yeah.
I just want to say that's an important thing about the whole life. So back to your original question, the takeaways.
Yeah, takeaways.
The takeaways, besides the obvious, you got to discern, you need to pay attention, you know, all of that. Let me give you some, not obscure, but if we said, what are the few that are really going to make a difference? Number one, take personal responsibility for figuring out through, in choice one in particular, your instinct is going to be, oh gosh, my boss is doing that to me. Really hold yourselves accountable. Use the process in there to say, what are the few things that I'm doing that if I just change my behavior, I can reclaim my own time, attention, and energy? Because we're doing that.
Sure.
So if I could just find one or two things using that process to say, I'm going to stop answering email every 2 seconds, or I'm going to stop enabling this, whatever it might be, that's going to be a total relief to you. It's going to give you a real sense of power. The other thing, and this is timeless with Franklin Covey, and I'm going to say it, I don't care whether it's electronic, whether you use paper, whatever, you got to have your information organized and you have to have the right planning systems. You can't remember to act on something. The psychological effects and the brain science around getting things labeled, reappraised, Dr. Heidi Halverson will tell you, getting things out there, concrete, will raise the probabilities of execution 200 to 300%. So really put a, I don't care what the system is, get a system together. Obviously, we recommend things in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, the last thing I'll say is the technology addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I think people really, not I think I know, don't realize how much time is going into using, I say the technology, but it could be going down the rat hole of whether it's Google or whatever, which is a wonder. Here's the paradox again. Google is wonderful, but how many of us end up like an hour late? We went to look up one thing,
sure,
and we just kept hitting links, and an hour later, we're like, oh gosh.
It's metaphorically down the rabbit hole.
Said rat hole, but yes, rabbit hole. And this at home, too, I see it all the time with their smartphones and stuff like that. It's not bad. It's all good. But how much are we using? How much can we take personal responsibility to say in our language, you know what? I'm using this in a quadrant three, quadrant four kind of way. I got to change this behavior. And then I will put a plug in every class and people that I talk to. You want to really kill yourself? Then be texting in your car when you're driving. It's sort of my new,
you know, that's
my new thing.
That's completely serious, too.
It's a terrible thing. If you're going to be conscious about stopping one thing, mm-hmm, if you're doing it, stop using...
Do not text while you're driving.
Text using your smartphone. It takes a split second, and forget about extraordinary productivity. Yeah. It just is a game changer.
No, lives are...
Lives, your own, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a terrible thing.
The other thing that I find interesting about a lot of this is, again, they're useful tools. You can't make an instant value judgment of, well, that's just bad. But it's a discipline. You know, and there's the good and the bad together. And you have to, like any other thing in life, you have to be able to develop that discipline, right?
Discipline is consciousness.
Almost the word discipline can be a little alienating, though. But you have to take ownership.
You have to take ownership. You have to become intentional. You know, I actually put the book up on Facebook yesterday. I announced it to my inner world kind of thing that was coming out.
Well, you're selling a book. You got to be out there messing with your social media stuff. So, you know.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's my friends and stuff like that. And it was an interesting somebody posted back, obviously, and said something like, I'm going to mess it up, but said something like, yes, well, but if I read the book, then I will have to be productive.
Right.
And
that,
I
that
thought
sort of
that
willful
was...
ignorance type of, I'm okay with not knowing.
With not knowing, so
I'm
I don't
okay
have to
that.
Hold myself accountable. So it's discipline. and making that decision to really act on it.
Are you in favor of a lot of the thinking, and we've interviewed people on this topic here and there, but are you in favor of kind of recent but growing in popularity thinking of just turning off and walking away from technology for like a couple hours a day, or if your job permits, I guess, you know, on a weekend or something like that, and almost becoming more, you know, I hear the word mindful a lot, and I hear yoga or Eastern types of Zen things being introduced just to sort of cut out the noise, just sort of letting your brain rest a little bit and your soul rest a little bit. Do you buy into that?
So the first thing I'll say is, and I want your audience to know this, I am by no means perfect at this. So
what?
I suffer with everybody
else. You wrote
else.
The book.
I wrote the book, and I'm always very clear with people. And I, as part of my reputation, this is not like I'm the perfect model. I have to work. This is very hard work. I have to work at it all the time. And with my technology as well. And I will say it's not easy, but the answer is absolutely yes. So it's very hard for me to finally put my phone down. When I do, and when I take a couple of hours, or I get over being terrified when I'm in the car and I realize I left my phone home, and I just be, or I'm with my family, or I'm just with myself, the energy gain, what you realize, if you just do it, what you realize is it's so wearing to check my email. Just hearing it is wearing.
You're burning cycles. You're burning energy.
You're burning
whatever.
You are bringing yourself to this, you know, again, the prefrontal cortex is very fragile. It takes an enormous amount of energy. And again, another whole day of conversation around that. So every time, even though it's the back of your brain that's causing you to look because the brain likes novel, you have to consciously go, oh, I don't need to, or I do need to, or whatever. Even the recovery time to get back to what you're doing is
right. Gigantic. Right.
It's so stressful. It's so much release. Cortisol is another neurotransmitter drug thing in your brain that's just killer. It just, every time something happens, you're hitting that cortisol button. It's amazing. So I am a believer. You mentioned mindfulness. I'm actually about to embark on a course to really get inside of that. But the studies that I've read so far, amazing what mindfulness can do, even changing the brain structures, making the hippocampus, other structures larger, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Really amazing. So yes, even if you do it for an hour.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So we've been speaking to Corey Cogan, who, along with Adam Merrill and Lena Renee, the three of them have authored the book, The Five Choices, The Path to Extraordinary Productivity. Corey, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
AMA webinars provide 90 minutes of focused how-to instruction and specific solutions for solving your most pressing work issues. For $149, you'll participate in an in-depth course taught by an expert who will answer your questions and guide you through the process a step at a time. For a complete schedule of upcoming AMA webinars, visit our events calendar at amanet.org/events. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.